I will begin this morning by the reading of a section of Paul's letter to the Ephesians, the 5th chapter, from the 1st to the 14th verse. And I'd like for you to share in the reading of this text. Be therefore imitators of God as beloved children, and walk in love, even as Christ also loved you and gave himself up for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for an odor of a sweet smell. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be named among you as becomes saints, nor filthiness, nor foolish talking or jesting, which are not befitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know of a surety, that no fornicator or unclean person nor covetous man who is an idolater has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Let no man deceive you with empty words. For because of these things comes the wrath of God upon the sons of disobedience. Be not therefore partakers with them. For you were once darkness, but now are you light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the light is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is well-pleasing to the Lord. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather even reprove them. For the things which are done by them in secret, it is a shame even to speak of. But all things, when they are reproved, are made manifest by the light. For everything that is made manifest is light. Wherefore he says, awake, you that sleep, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall shine upon you. I am concerned this morning that many of us, as children of light, as we see ourselves, are walking in the dark. And that has happened because, much like Rip Van Winkle, whom Washington Irving wrote about, we have slept through the revolution. We still imagine ourselves somehow to be living in a society that is in some measure supportive of the things that we treasure as Christians, when in truth we have become subtly over time to treasure the things that this dark society treasures. And I want to tell you this morning that it is a dark society in which we live. There have been epochs in the history of nations. That is to say, times that have made quantum differences, enormous differences in the moral and spiritual condition of people. And I am persuaded, with no doubt, that you and I are living through one of those quantum shifts in the spirit, attitude, and values of a people that produces for us as Christians some special challenges. And if we do not awake, if we are not sensitized to these realities, we are destined to be part of it. And some of us are asleep. We are asleep because we are taking in this filth, this vain philosophy which is being promoted by American institutions and by American society continually. In the history of the nation of Israel, in the book of Judges, chapter 2, we are told that during the days of Joshua and those that were with him, the people remembered the Lord and his commandments, but in the time of those who came after, they forgot. In the last 30 years in this country, we have been undergoing the same procedure. A new generation has arisen, with new ideas. Americans of 1992 are not the Americans of 1950 or 1960. Their values and their ideas are totally different, and we need to face that fact. This generation has joined the church of what's going on, and are no longer a part of the society that once existed. In 2 Kings chapter 21, we have the record of the fall of Israel and Judah. And in Jeremiah chapter 5 and 6, we have Jeremiah's strong remonstrances against the nation, in which he says that both prophets and priests are corrupt, that it's a corrupt people with corrupt leadership. I have no doubt in my mind that that describes the American nation of 1992. There's a description in the New Testament in the first chapter of Romans of the corruption of the ancient Greco-Roman world that started, he says, with the idea that we are God. They made God in their own image. They refused to have him in their knowledge. And there is a long list toward the conclusion of the first chapter of Romans of the inordinate corruption, moral and otherwise, that beset that nation. We live in a modern and immoral society. In 1987, Alan Bloom, who is a professor of, I suppose one could say, politics and society at Chicago University, wrote a book, The Closing of the American Mind. It was a very popular book at the time because you could sense as he wrote the closing of a door. As a consequence, he said of two things. That we had discredited in the recent decades the very ideas of our founding fathers as a nation. That is the idea that God has granted to all men inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We have been told that we will rebuild our society on other than God-given rights. That our pragmatic philosophy will enable us to discover, as a result of reason and science, a foundation for morals. We are still waiting for that new foundation. Openness has driven out, Bloom said, the old beliefs, leaving only the speechless, meaningless country. I believe that is an accurate analysis of the United States. Only the last aroma of the old ways remains. Freedom, we speak about, and equality. The cry of the sexual revolution of the 60s was freedom, and the cry of the feminist movement that has come thereafter was equality. And the question that needs to be asked is freedom to do what? And freedom to be what? And equality with what? And for what? Let me say this to you. That as a principle, freedom and equality, I believe, are grounded in biblical revelation. And I'm more than that persuaded that only by the announcement of God can these principles be maintained. They don't exist apart from deity. But freedom without direction and freedom without purpose, freedom without spiritual values, is like a ship without a rudder. We are going wherever we will, but we have no idea where we're going. The other element that Bloom said was missing from this nation, and he is certainly not a believer. The other element of fundamental primary learning that has disappeared is religion. As a respect for the sacred, capital S, the latest fad has soared. Real religion and knowledge of the Bible have diminished to the vanishing point. It was the home and the houses of worship related to it where religion lived. Passages from the Psalms and the Gospels echoed in children's hearts. Attending church or synagogue, praying at the table were a way of life, inseparable from the moral education that was supposed to be the family's special responsibility in this democracy. Actually, the moral teaching was the religious teaching. There was no abstract doctrine. That is, no moral teaching cut apart and separate from religion. The things one was supposed to do, the sense that the world supported them and punished disobedience, were all incarnated in the biblical stories. The loss of the gripping inner life vouchsafed those who were nurtured by the Bible must be primarily attributed to the family, which with all its rights to privacy has proved unable to maintain any content of its own. The dreariness of the family's spiritual landscape passes belief. I believe that is an accurate analysis of the American family life. And he adds that I am speaking here not of the unhappy, broken homes that are such a prominent part of American life, but the relatively happy ones where husband and wife like each other and care about their children, very often unselfishly devoting the best parts of their lives to them, but they have nothing to give their children in the way of a vision of the world, of high models of action, or profound sense of connection with others. Exactly correct. Not just the thousands and millions of broken homes, one-parent families, who without moral and spiritual direction, but those that are together, those that have some integrity, they're without spiritual direction too. And we need not think with the tide running in that direction so heavily that somehow or another we can drift on our oars and expect not to be carried in the same direction. We are being carried in the same direction if we are not fighting, I say, heartily against it. We are children of light, and we're not to have fellowship with darkness. This point that Bloom makes about the absence of religion in the American home was well illustrated by an article in a recent copy of the Courier Journal on the editorial page, which tells about the Supreme Court of the state of Pennsylvania by a vote of 6 of 7 judges. That a murder conviction was reversed because the prosecuting attorney quoted the Bible. The man who wrote the article was no believer. But he laughed at those judges, and they deserve our derision. Not as occupants of an important seat, but as men who are being ludicrous. And the same court that nullified a verdict because the Bible had been quoted is the court that caused men who testified to lay their hand upon a Bible in order to assure the truth of what they were saying. We have become a stupid people. And we deserve the derision of thinking, men and women. But to illustrate more fully the sad tragedy of American society, we have recently been treated to a book written by 2 executives in one of the leading advertising companies in the country, J. Walter Thompson, James Patterson, and Peter Kim, the chairman and an executive vice president of that company, gave us the book The Day America Told the Truth. I don't know how confidently we can rest upon the conclusions of this book. Some effort was made to make it scientific. But I don't think that many of us will have difficulty believing it because intuitively and by experience we know that this is true. Here are some conclusions. 77% saw no reason to observe the Sabbath. That's another story. 74% said they would steal from those who wouldn't miss it. 64% said they would lie when it suited them as long as it didn't cause any real damage. 56% said they would drink and drive if they felt they could handle it because they knew their limit. 53% said they would cheat on their spouse and felt their spouse would do the same. 50% said that they would procrastinate at work and do absolutely nothing one day in five. That's a statement of what they did. 41% said they would use recreational drugs. 30% said they would cheat on their taxes to a point. Interesting that more people cheat on their wives than on their taxes. 31% said they're willing to put a lover at risk of disease. I sleep around a bit, but who doesn't, they said. 20% said, technically, I may have committed date rape, but I know she wanted it. 20% said they had been date raped. A lawyer, a woman from Washington, D.C., was used as a model of this new attitude. And she said, to be perfectly honest, some laws seem to apply to me and some I disregard. Some tenets of the Catholic Church add up, others are absurd or even insulting. I don't need the Pope, the press, or some lowly cop to tell me how to live my life. That's the way I honestly see it, and I don't think I've ever verbalized this thought before. This is the leading chapter in the book. The new moral authority in America. You are it. We do not believe in any transcendent law. We do not believe that there is a standard that exists beyond our own thought, beyond our own mind, that is to govern our behavior. 93% said that they and they alone decide what is right in their lives. They base their decisions on experience, even on daily whims. 84% said they would violate the established rules of religion. 81% said they had violated a law because it was wrong in their view. We are the law to ourselves. We have made ourselves the authority over church and God, says Patterson and Kim. We have made ourselves the clear authority over the government. We have made ourselves the authority over laws and the police. The fact is that, and that's something that's not material. 48% said there was nothing they would die for. 30% said they'd be willing to die for God. And 24% said they would be willing to die for their country. We've done this to ourselves by our great passion for freedom, mindless, pointless, directionless freedom. Religion has done it, too. The old liberalism of the 19th century that took the Bible apart and said it was a product of evolution, that it was not what it claimed to be, and then felt so distraught in the 20th century because of the vacuum that created, the emptiness and the hopelessness, that they tried to put it together again on a new basis, an existential basis, the idea that it's true if I believe it. And it is its influence on me as an individual that creates the reality. So the Bible is just something that stirs me, confronts me with Jesus in some sense, and whatever happens inside me, existentially, that's the truth. I had a man tell me, perhaps I've cited it, in St. Paul, Minnesota. After a long discussion about what the Bible said about a particular subject, he said, well, Paul, that's the truth for you, but that's not the truth for me. How many value systems are in the existential world? 5 billion, because that's how many people there are. And that philosophy permeates many pulpits in this country. And it's interesting to me that we have now had, in addition to this existential philosophy, the truth is whatever I believe it to be, the flowing in of Eastern philosophy, the idea of Napoleon Hill, that if you think you can grow rich. That was his idea. Been picked up by a lot of American preachers who believe that faith in faith is the answer. That whatever you can conceive, you can achieve. But reality is created by your mind, that you need to tap into your own personal resources that are a part of the power of the universe. Eastern religion, Buddhism, that's where it comes from. The world soul, not a personal God, but some power deep within yourself that's a part of what you're a part of, and you're a part of the world, and you just need to tap into the resources of your own personality. What it is men become gods. That's what it is. And the evidence of that is even present in, ironically, the Pentecostal movement, the charismatic movement, the idea of commanding God to bring me health and to bring me wealth. Tapping into these great resources, learning to pray the right prayer, learning to think the right thought, learning to imagine great things and to believe these great things, and I create my reality by my own mind. Let me tell you. That's not the gospel. That's paganism. And a lot of it has filtered into our thinking until we are unable to say about anything, this is right and this is wrong. It permeates the school system because it permeates the family. And it permeates the family because it's permeated the minds of America. We are free people who have used our freedom to enslave ourselves to passion and to idiocy. And we need to face some realities about ourselves. Americans, says this book, are making up their own rules and laws. Only 13% of us believe in all the Ten Commandments. We choose which laws of God we believe. There is absolutely no moral consensus in the country. These are the words of Patterson and Ken. As there was in the 1950s and 1960s, there is very little respect for the law or any law. Page 6 and page 235, it's repeated. Under the aegis of this kind of thinking that we find it difficult to find what is right and what is wrong, to say what is good and what is evil, the United States is far and away the most violent of all the industrialized nations. 20 times the murder rate of American males is that of Western Europe. 20 times. And 40 times that of Japan. We're a nation of liars. The words of Patterson and Kim. 91% of us lie regularly and often for no good reason. These are interviews with people who tell about their own story. Only 45% of us thought it was wrong to lie. And we wonder why trust does not exist in this country. We wonder why people enter into marriage with doubt. We wonder why the business community is shot full of corruption, dishonesty. Only 31% of us believe that honesty is the best policy. 31% of all married Americans are having or have had affairs. That's bad enough. 1 in 3. 62% of us think there's nothing wrong with it, which means some other people must be contemplating the possibility without any moral restraint. Childhood has been lost in this country. Again, the words of Patterson and Kim. Lost. I remember going to Europe from this country in the 1950s, 1960s, and seeing young girls, 15, 16 years old, still obviously in their childhood, no makeup, braided hair, pigtails, riding their bicycles, going about, obviously courting something not too near their minds, just enjoying being young. When in this country already in the 1960s, junior high school girls were being dressed up in adult makeup and made to think they were adults. The end of childhood in America has come about because young people now, young people 18 to 24, one in five lost their virginity before or at age 13. 61% before age 60. Why? Somebody says, well, it was probably love. Or, if not love, pleasure. No. These respondents say it was peer pressure. Love and pleasure way down the list. Peer pressure. The pressure of a dark society that is stupid to the core. And we have, in an effort to make more out of sex, made less of it. Less of it. It's like Alan Bloom said about a certain discussion in his classroom when he observed that the time was when parents would say to a young lady, their daughter, who wanted to live a dissolute life and sleep around, you can't stay at this house. Why has that changed, he said. One girl in the classroom at the University of Chicago said, because it's no big deal. I want to tell you something, young people and all in this audience. What we've done about sex is just exactly that. We've said it's no big deal. C.S. Lewis, on one occasion, opined that he had heard from his contemporaries that we ought to treat sex just like any other natural appetite, natural desire. And he said at first he thought they wanted to be really consistent about that until he found out that they didn't want anybody to act naturally about any other thing except when four naked legs got in the bed. That if you felt like running in a war instead of fighting, you ought not to run. That if you felt like being a coward in the face of danger, you ought not to be a coward. But if you felt like having sex, you ought to have it. Don't talk to me about logic. Don't talk to me about rationality. Don't talk to me about good common sense, because there's no good common sense to it. We are destroying ourselves. The baby boomers, age 25 to 45, 46, 48, separated sex and marriage in the 60s and 70s. 29% of the baby boomers were virgins at marriage. But this new group that are called the baby busters are living out just exactly what was produced earlier. The end of childhood. Young people cannot be children anymore. As one elementary school teacher in L.A. said, when she was asked what happened to childhood, said they are skipping it. It is a tragedy. There's the end of the family, too, in this society. War between the sexes. One thing that Patterson and Kim have documented, according to their study, is that the sexes are at war with each other. Feminism has helped to create it. It's a matter of rivalry now, no longer a matter of living together, sharing with each other. It's rivalry now. I must have my part. It's the individualism of the 60s and 70s gone to seed. The idea that I must have my fulfillment, I must see my accomplishment. I'm free to do whatever I please to do. In the 1990s, they say men and women are meeting in a vacuum. They feel almost universally that they cannot communicate with each other. There is distrust and bitterness between the sexes, and it's operating right on the surface. 44% say that most marriages will end in divorce. 59% believe it's smart to draw up a prenuptial agreement. There's also the dying of love of parents for children. This is not revealed in our crime statistics in this country, which these two gentlemen feel are well below reality. But the people they interviewed, one in six had been physically abused as a child, one in seven sexually abused. Now maybe that's too much. But does that tell you where we are? Without natural affection, Romans 1:31 says. This is not a good society. There's also the dying love of children for parents. 46% thought their children would not take care of them in their old age, and I suspect they may be right. When we hear about aged people being dumped off at the emergency room and a speeding car leaving them behind. 54% said the children ought to care for aged parents. 44% said the government or themselves or charitable institutions. We're going to exist triumphantly in a society like this? We're not going to have a society. There is nothing to hold it together. There is no sense of the common good. There is no selfless love in this society. I don't mean that absolute, but I mean in the dominant sense of that term. And if you go with the flow, if you fit into what we're living in, I guarantee you, you'll live in a dark world. There's the end of community in this society. 72% said that he did not know the people next door. 2/3 have never given any time to community activity, and 1/4 said they didn't care. We are thieves. 75% confessed offenses against private property. 60% confessed taking things from work. 29% confessed shoplifting. 25% said they didn't repay loans. 21% said they stole from their parents. And 13% from their friends. We're a nation of addicts. 13 million Americans report from this survey having a drinking problem. 19 million a serious drinking problem. 1/3 of all adults have personally suffered from someone else's drinking. 56% reported driving while intoxicated, and only 14% said they'd been caught. And yet, out of this same survey, we learned that 90% of us believe in God. 82% believe in an afterlife that includes heaven and hell. That surprised me. Heaven and hell? 46% believe they will spend eternity in heaven. Guess how many believe they'll spend eternity in hell? 4%. As to the rest of them, must be undecided. 58% say they went to services, religious services, regularly while growing up. 27% do so today. The conclusion of Patterson and Kim, for most people, religion plays virtually no role in shaping their opinions on a long list of important public questions. This is true even for questions that seem closely related to religion, birth control, abortion, even teaching creationism, and the role of women in the clergy. Their statement. We have established ourselves as the authority on morality. We now choose which commandments to believe and which ones not to believe. Clearly, the God of the 1990s in America is a distant and pale reflection of the God of our forefathers. This is not the jealous God of the Old Testament. 6 in 7 people think that it is okay not to believe in God. Rather, Americans seem to use God to refer to a general principle of good in life, or sometimes he or she is the creator who set off the Big Bang but doesn't intervene in human affairs. For most Americans, God is not to be feared, or for that matter, loved. These words from a California high school, Friday afternoon, students leaving a class in social living, the teacher's parting words are, "Have a great weekend. Be safe. Buckle up. Just say no. And if you can't say no, then use a condom." The teacher explains her philosophy. I try to give support to everyone's value system. So I say, if you're a virgin, fine. If you're sexually active, fine. If you're gay, fine. That's our world. That's not a fiction. That's the world we live in. And the churches have become a haven for much of it. I want to give you this as I conclude this lesson this morning. Moral authority, along with spiritual authority and sovereignty, resides in God as expressed in Jesus Christ. That's the teaching of the gospel. Jesus says in Matthew 28:18, "All authority has been given to me, both in heaven and on earth." All authority. You want to know what's right? Listen to what he says. You want to know what's wrong? Listen to what he says. And failing to do that will cost you. Matthew 7:13-14, out of the Sermon on the Mount, enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and many there are that go in thereat. Not 4%. Straight is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to life, and few there be that find it. That's the statement of the Son of God, in whom all sovereignty and power resides, according to the Scripture. He concludes the Sermon on the Mount by saying that those that hear those words of his that are spoken and do them, he will liken to the man that built his house upon the rock. The storm came, the floods came, and the house stood. And to those that hear these words of mine and do them not, he said, I will liken him to the man that built his house upon the sand. He's talking here about transcendent joy or transcendent catastrophe. Now, why am I speaking with such earnestness and such force? Because I know young people and older people alike that we are living in a society that says all these things are false. That we are not really at last morally accountable. We can choose our way and God will back us up or whatever there is out there. That believing a thing makes it so. And I want to tell you something else. What Alan Bloom said about the family is absolutely true. He said television and radio has taken control of the family. And parents have fought it a little, but basically have just yielded to it entirely. It is absolutely true. And those instruments of propaganda are filling the minds of children all over this country and of adults with this filth. Don't tell me it's not true. You listen to me now. Television is the primary purveyor of this false philosophy, this dark, ungodly, and unholy system. And we're sitting around with our VCRs and running all kinds of filth to our homes, and I'm talking about people that are Christian. And all of us have got things to think about in this connection. We are voyeurs. We are voyeurs. We don't want to commit adultery, but we like to watch other people do it on the soap operas and the evening shows, right in prime time, right when the kids are up, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. We do not want to be profane, but we like to watch programs where profanity pours out in the flood. We have learned to rent the R-rated videos and to go to the R-rated movies by saying, well, you can't. I mean, it's not all bad. Let me tell you, PG-13 contains filth. But we have grown accustomed to it. Do you know what Americans will say in response to their behavior? Patterson and Kim, chapter 2. You can't see it probably. If everybody's doing it, why shouldn't I? If everybody is breaking the rules, am I a complete jerk to play by them myself? And that is exactly what I've heard from Christians. Everybody's doing it. You can't find anything decent. It's the best there is. If that's the best there is, it's not good enough. And the Christian who's understood what it means to be a child of light must leave it behind. We all must leave it behind. If that's what there is, then we're not going to just quit running the video. Quit turning on the television set and watching this garbage. You say, that's not doing any harm. 5th chapter of Matthew, verse 22, I believe it is. The lamp of the body is the eye. It is by means of the eye and the ear, I might add, that philosophies, ideas, concepts come into our hearts, and into our hearts these concepts come to produce attitudes, and attitudes come to produce acts and change in behavior. I'm just as serious as a heart attack about this in my own case and the case of every other Christian. We're going to have to start re-examining our behavior, what we are doing, what we are being a part of, just because everybody's doing it. Is this what you want to be? What this book describes? We're down to it. Do you really believe? That Jesus Christ is the Son of God and Lord? Then live your convictions. Escape the darkness. And live in the light. These earnest words of the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 6 are as apropos today as they were in the ungodly world of Corinth 19 centuries ago. 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14, be not unequally yoked with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness and iniquity? Or what communion hath light with darkness? And what concord hath Christ with Belial? Or what portion hath a believer with an unbeliever? And what agreement has a temple of God with idols? For we are a temple of the living God, even as God said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore, come ye out from among them and be separate, saith the Lord, and touch no unclean thing, and I will receive you, and you will be to, I will be to you a father, and you shall be to me sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. It's a choice we make. Some of us are making our companions, our constant companions, out of people who live in this filth, whose philosophy is like this. And we wonder why we're in trouble. Our boyfriends and our girlfriends, they come out of this ungodly world. They're not people who love higher things. And we're not there to convert them. We're there to be accepted. To be received by the world. Which acceptance we court fervently. It's not for the Christian. If you've ever stood before men and said that Jesus Christ is Lord, you need to be ashamed of that conduct. Because it's wrong. Because it is a treachery against the gospel of Jesus Christ, against the God who loves you and the Savior who died for you. It is a scandal and a slander. Drug addicts, some of us, taking our little bite of alcohol, our little taste of drugs, and at the same time saying, I'm a Christian. You can be. And you ought to be. But when you live like that, my dear brother and sister, you are not walking in the light as He is in the light, and you do not have fellowship one with another. What's the answer to this? Same answer that's always been given. Repentance. The voice of Jonah to the ungodly city of ancient Nineveh. Repent. That's the same message. We've got to leave it behind. We said we would once. We declared that we would. We need to do so. For the sake of eternity. For our children's sake and for our grandchildren's sake, we need to live apart from this unholy and ungodly generation that has chosen to go down the dark path of destruction. We live in the world, but we just must not be a part of it. Whatever our need is this morning to respond to these thoughts, or to other thoughts that have been riding in our hearts and in our minds continually in recent days because we have known we're doing things we ought not to be doing. Let the results be on the basis of faith and a true, broken-spirited repentance while we're standing and saying.